Всем большой привет! Вы слушаете подкаст «Что там в туре?». С вами сегодня Елизавета, телеграм-канал «Теннисология», Кирилл, издание «Чемпионат».
Всем большой привет!
And not only, today we have a special guest, an absolute tennis Twitter legend and big friend of us, Bastien Fashion. Bonjour, Bastien!
Bonjour, thanks for having me.
We are really happy that you decided to join us. And unfortunately, today we're making an episode without Angie because she can't take part, but we already miss her and hope that she will join us in next times.
Bastien, we're all glad to see you. But first of all, tell us, how did tennis come to your life?
It was pretty much written in the stars. You know, I was born the day of the 1994 men's Roland Garros final. So, you know, I was made to come to like tennis later in life. My dad was a tennis teacher as well. So yeah, I picked up a racket when I was 6 or 7, immediately liked the game. Then I started watching professional tennis when I was 9 or 10 years old. I decided that Federer was my hero when I started watching Wimbledon and other tournaments. Then I played tournaments myself. I was nowhere near a professional level. I very much enjoyed the sport, and I figured that I wanted my life to revolve around tennis. So if I wasn't going to be professional, I had to play on my other strength, which I figured were social media, communications, marketing, stuff like this. So yeah, pretty much made a career out of this. And I'm 29 years old now, and still my whole life is around tennis. So yeah, it's great.
Oh, it sounds great. Now you are well known in media space, but how all this started? Please share the details.
So when I was 21 years old, I was an exchange student in Charleston, South Carolina in the US. And I was going to stay there for 9 months. And I knew that at the end of the year, there was a WTA tournament there in Charleston. In fact, it was the largest women's only tournament in the world, WTA 500. And I knew that there was maybe a chance that I could work there and get my first experience in tennis. So I used a few connections here and there to get an opportunity to interview with them. And they hired me to do social media for the tournament during that week. So April 2016, was my first experience in tennis. There I met American journalist Nick McElvo. We got along and he recommended me to Roland Garros. So I got to work for Roland Garros when I got back to France as well. And then, you know, I had to do a few internships and everything. And then I had more and more opportunities. My first full-time job then was with the Mouratoglou Academy. I worked there for 3 years. And then I started freelancing in 2021, start of 2021. I started working with clients such as Tennis TV, ITF, Davis Cup, Montreal, Washington, a lot of prestigious tennis clients. I'm very grateful for all of them. And it all started with this tournament in Charleston back in 2016.
Yes, it's a beautiful and long way. And of course, we know that you have written a great book. Now it's only in French, but are you going to translate it into English? And please, a few words about your book.
Yeah, I'm going to translate it eventually. So it was released in French last year, November last year. It's about the big three, Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. It's a core subject for me. I grew up with them. As I said, I was a Federer fan. I almost followed his entire career. Same with Nadal and Djokovic. So I followed them for 15, 20 years. And I wanted to be first in France to tell their story. I had a lot of memories. Then I did a lot of research as well. It took me I would say 1 year of my life to write it and to research about it and to publish it, find a publishing house and publish it. And yeah, it's been great ever since. It's opened up a lot of opportunities for me. Now I can say I'm an author. And to respond to your question, I'm going to translate eventually, but I think I'm going to wait until Djokovic is done, because he's rewriting history in real time. And ever since the book was published, he already won 3 more slams. So, you know, the story is not exactly the same now. And at the end of the book, I said that there wasn't an argument for Djokovic and Nadal to be considered as the GOAT. Now it's pretty much indisputable that Djokovic is the GOAT. So this part I'm going to have to rewrite. So yeah, just wait until he's done, and same with Nadal, to publish it in English, I think.
So I think one day we can make a contest between our audience about your book, and someone will win it, and in English also. And any other plans for new books, or you'd like to be focused on something else?
Yeah, I actually have a second book in the works. I cannot disclose the subject yet, but I'm working with another publishing house. It's more for the French market. It's going to be about French players, but yeah, it's not done yet. We're still negotiating. But yeah, I definitely have a plan to write a second book in the future, and even more in the next few years.
Fingers crossed for that. And now we had a really huge and interesting introduction about you. Let's discuss the results of the year. I know that Kirill has some questions to all of us.
Yeah, Bastian, please tell us, what player did impress you the most in 223?
Which player impressed me the most?
Please tell us.
Yeah, I think the easy answer is Djokovic. I should have known better, but I didn't think he had another year where he would won 3 slams and ATP finals in him. But yeah, again, I should have known better. He was technically one win away in the Wimbledon final from winning all 4 slams. He could have completed the calendar slam. That's just unbelievable to do that at 36 years of age. That's, for me, that is the year he sealed his as the GOAT. I don't think it's going to change. I don't think Nadal he's coming back, but I don't think he's going to be competing for. So I think Djokovic really sealed that status last year. And then on the women's side, Iga again. You know, it's always the most difficult year when you just had a year where you won 2 slams, Roland Garros, US Open. Then the year after that, you have to confirm. And even though it wasn't her best year, she still ended the year as the world number one. She still won Roland Garros again, first time defending a slam. She was able to bounce back after Sabalenka clinched world number one after the US Open. So I would say I was impressed with her, and of course Sabalenka as well. And Coco Gauff winning her first slam at 19 in her home country. That was beautiful to see. And then to circle back to the men's side, of course, Carlos Alcaraz winning Wimbledon. I think it's the most prestigious slam. It's the most complicated one to win because of the specificities of the surface. So yeah, him winning it at 20 against the final, who was undefeated for 4 years at Wimbledon, that was so impressive. And then at the end of the year, Yannick Sinner making a lot of progress for the last 2 months of the year, winning the Davis Cup, beating Djokovic in the group stage of the ATP Finals in Turin. I would say those are the players I was most impressed with this year.
I think Yannick also impressed everyone with the hugest fan base, and I mean Karate Boys, because it's an outstanding event about fans And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's the first time when a player has such a strong fan base around him, and also with their personal merch, I mean, t-shirts and etc. That's also huge commercial success. And I mostly agree with you about everyone. And also, I'd like to mark Markéta Vondrousova, who made her first final at Roland Garros a few years ago, and after which he forced she couldn't play because of some injuries, and this year she made Wimbledon final and also title. And I think this about very strong spirit when you have lots of problems about your health, but you come back and you come back really stronger and you come back as a winner.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely one of the stories of the year, and you know, just a great story of resilience. Obviously, she'd made the Roland Garros final in 2019. And the Olympic Games final in 2021. So she had been before, but the way back is always tough. And yeah, to win Wimbledon as an NC player, I'm not sure it had been done before, or at least it was a long time. But yeah, such a great run. She was down 4-1, I think, against Pegula in the quarters in the third set. So yeah, just an amazing story of resilience from her.
Yes, and it's also a great story about Goff, because when she won her first 500 title, everyone was like, it's her maximum, she won't do something more. A few days later, a few weeks, okay, and she wins 1000 title, and it's like, it's her ceiling, nothing else. And after it, she wins US Open, and she had a really great part of her speech to her haters, like, continue speaking because I'm winning during all these moments, and it's really great because hate is gonna hate, and you just have to do what you do.
Yeah, such an inspiring run, and truly, like, it was the summer of Coco Washington. She won the biggest title of her career at WTA 500. Then 2 weeks later, winning Cincinnati again, biggest title of her career, WTA 1000. And then 3 weeks later, again, biggest title of her career. Like, she just was unstoppable that summer. And yeah, I cannot wait to see what's in store for her next year.
And also over Hellman commercial success.
Yeah. She's just an amazing personality, a bright young human. I've had the privilege to know her a bit through the Moi Tuglu Academy. I know her since she was 13 years old, I think. We met at the end of 2017. She had just made the US Open Juniors final back then at 13. It's been a privilege to see her evolve into the player that she is today.
Almost since childhood. Thank you. Kirill, what's about you?
The player who impressed me the most?
Yes, please share us.
Let me think, but I will probably choose Ben Shelton, because his journey started at Australian Open on court 14, and he made the first major quarterfinal at Lord Lever Arena, but he lost Tommy Paul, at quarterfinals, but he debuted in the top 50 shortly afterward, so for me it was definitely a surprise to see Ben, who became a professional a couple of months earlier at the stages, and it was in fact only a second Grand Slam campaign for the young American, for me it was definitely a very good run at AO. So then Ben Jane enjoyed a dream run at the US Open. I remember he beat Pedro Kachin, Domi, Aslan Karatsev, and Tommy Paul. I think he defeated again from Novak Djokovic, at the semifinals. But although he lost, he finished this season at number 17 in the world. He lifted the first singles trophy of his career in Tokyo. And I remember a good semifinals against Jerome. He saved a couple of match points, and Shelton was also unbeaten in Lever Cup matches. So it was a great run here. As for
And you know about Shelton, it was the first season for him in Europe, yeah. Because before he has never traveled abroad USA, and everywhere where he came, it was his first time in Italy, his first time in Spain, in Great Britain, everywhere.
Yeah, his trip to the Australian Open at the beginning of the year was his first trip overseas ever. That was his first time mm-hmm. outside the US. So yeah, it's been a year of first for him, and yeah, great point. Definitely an interesting year for him. He's a big time player. He had such an interesting year. I mean, make quarters of the Australian Open, then not winning back to back matches for like 18 tournaments in a row, and then making the semis of the US Open again with such. I'm thinking about beating Tiafoe in the quarterfinals on Ultra Stadium. Yeah, he's made for the spotlight, and he has such a great explosive personality. I think he's great for tennis, and yeah, that was fun because during the Laver Cup, Rod Laver, the man himself, hosted a Q&A on Twitter. And I asked him a question about who he thought would be the next big star to come out of men's tennis. And I thought he was going to say Alcaraz or Rune or Sinner. And he mm-hmm. said Shelton. He said Shelton is the next big player coming. I think it helped that he's a lefty just like him. But yeah, I was surprised by his answer, and he said Shelton is going to be a Grand Slam champion in the future. So we'll see if the prediction comes true. But yeah, the great Rod Laver said that Ben Shelton is going to be a Grand Slam champion. So we'll see.
Yes, we'll see. But I think right now his results are like we call typical American roller coaster. When you win, and then as you mentioned, you can't win a back-to-back match for a really long period. And about women. Kirill, you're the most impressive player for you.
I agree with Coco Gauff. Yeah, she had a breakthrough summer with titles in Washington, Cincinnati, and then a big one in the USA. It's an open, but I would choose Mira Andreeva. She affirmed her status as one to watch as a Russian announced herself in Madrid. She beat Leila Fernandez, and then two top seeds in straight sets, but she also made the third round at the French Open, yeah? And I will definitely keep an eye on her next year. I think she can even break the top 10 for the first time. What do you think?
I think top 10 is not so big to get involved quite everyone, because you should book one place for Beatriz Adatmaye in top 10, and I'm not sure that it will be a free space for Mira. Anyway, fingers crossed for her.
Yeah, so many great players and so little spots in the top 10. I think the top 5-7 players in the WTA rankings right now are going to stay in the top 10 next year. But yeah, there's definitely a few spots that can change. Adatmaye is one of the first that could get into the top 10. I think it's going to be too early for Andreeva, but definitely going to keep an eye on her next year. I think she's going to be seeded at Slams by Roland Garros, Wimbledon, US Open. I'm not sure when, but she will be. Yeah, she had such a great year as well. She's only 16, I think, still. She was in the fourth round of Wimbledon. She was up a set and a break on Madison Keys in the fourth round, so she could have made the quarters and gone even beyond. Yeah, she's a bit similar to when Coco Gauff came on the tour when she was 15 and had a great run at Wimbledon as well. So we'll see how it goes.
Yes, and I think that Mira is a little bit explosive, but it's not questionable because she's just a teenager, and I couldn't imagine me on her place, how I would behave myself and how I would pressure. I would manage all this pressure, so I think she has lots of time to make some works with these psychological mistakes, and she'll have a really bright future, but maybe not this year about top 10.
Yeah.
But we will see.
Mm-hmm.
Bastian, what's your personal top matches of the year?
Wait, I actually had a list, let me remember it. On the men's side, I think it's pretty obvious. It's the two Alcaraz-Djokovic matches, the one in the Wimbledon final and the one in the Cincinnati final. Just an amazing sequence of brutal, animalistic rallies between the best two players in the world. We've talked about it, Alcaraz beating Djokovic, upsetting Djokovic in the Wimbledon final. Such an amazing breakthrough. And then, you know, Djokovic taking his revenge in the Cincinnati final. He had the point to prove after losing that final. And then it really kicked off his incredible end of the year, winning the US Open after, winning Bercy, the ATP finals. I think that was such an important win for him. And you could see from his reaction after the match, ripping his shirt off. And the great ceremony between them after that. Yeah, just those two matches for me were the best two matches on the men's side. And women's side, I think the best match of the year was the Australian Open final between Sabalenka and Rybakina. You know, Rybakina going for her second slam after Wimbledon and Sabalenka going for her first after losing so many matches, close matches in the semifinal stage. Previously, and fighting through and winning that match really kicked off her incredible year, making the semis of every slam this year. So yeah, it was the match of the year for me. And then also the Roland Garros final between Świątek and Muchova. Muchova, who was up a break in the third set. I really thought she had it, but then Iga clinched it back, you know, defending Roland Garros, just an amazing display of grit and resilience. And also the semifinal before that, Muchova beating Sabalenka for match points down. Yeah, there was so many great matches this year on the men's and women's side. Yeah, so many so many to choose from.
You know, I've seen lots of articles about different results, about ATP and WT matches. And as for me, I'd like to mention the match between Monfils and Bias at Roland Garros. I was at that match, and maybe that I was there means it's special for me, but it was really a huge comeback from Gael at his age and that obstacles which he had. And it was such an overwhelming atmosphere, and that what he made, it was obvious that he couldn't continue playing next round. But that evening, that was electricity in the air and everywhere. So for me, it's my top of the year.
Yeah, definitely. And if I'm not mistaken, you were in Paris during Roland Garros. So you definitely felt that electricity coming from that match.
Yes, sure. And also electricity was, I was in Bercy this year, and I really liked the match between Djokovic and Rublev, because during this match, I saw Rublev on another level. He played perfectly, not just like a strongly hitter. It was a, you know, clever game, and he was so concentrated. No, his typical actions on the court when he gets nervous. And I thought that after this match, he will grow up and he will go on and add to his game. But unfortunately, then it was Torino, and we know what was in Torino with Rublev. But that match, it was like his peak for me.
Yeah, I think that was one of the best matches he's ever had against anyone. And he probably would have beaten anyone else not named Djokovic on the other side of the net. But yeah. As I tweeted at the time, no one will give you a good hard reality check like Djokovic. You know, even though Rublev played amazingly and was up a set and 6-5, you know, Djokovic just is unstoppable in the tiebreaks, and yeah, he's just a way to prevail every single time, and that's what he did that day. And yeah, unfortunately, Rublev went 0-3 at the ATP finals after that. And yeah, it's back to the drawing board again. We'll see how it goes for him next year. But yeah, if he had managed to beat Djokovic on that match and maybe played Dimitrov in the final, he would have had a great chance to maybe win another Masters this year, and things would have been different. But yeah, that's Djokovic for you.
Yes. Kirill, do you have something to add?
Yeah, of course. Speaking about Rublev, I would vote for his win over Rune at the Australian Open. It is a match I will remember for a while. What a great comeback it was at the deciding tiebreak. And of course, Andy Murray's first two matches in Australia with Matteo Berrettini and Thanasis Kokkinakis were both pretty awesome. I would choose one of them. But the most special one for me was in Monte Carlo, because I prefer clay battles, between Medvedev and Mr. Zverev. I remember Sasha served for the match at 6-3, 5-4, but Medi made a great comeback. He leveled the contest at once at a piece, I remember, and then he defeated Zverev at the decided tiebreak. For me, it was very hard. Because I'm a great fan of Sasha, and he has a match point at 7-6, but he did it convert into a victory. So
there was such a hectic match, and yeah. I remember very well because I was live tweeting that match for Tennis TV. I was working that week of Monte Carlo, and you know there was something happening every 2 minutes. I couldn't keep up. I had to figure out which clips I want to push. Like, I had to push Medvedev's antics and his hot shots, and Zverev was doing well as well, and the deciding set tiebreak was amazing as well. So many great clips from that match. So much content as always when Medvedev is playing. So yeah, that was definitely one of the matches I will remember from this year.
And you know, I also watched this match. And if when I speak about Monfils Baez electricity in the year with sign plus, it was like a you know negative electricity because everyone was so nervous. And plus, it was already night. It was so cold. So the obstacles was like a little bit against this match. But anyway, it happened. And we've talked a lot about events on the court, and let's talk about something what made you laugh off the court during the season, which you will definitely not forget. As for me, for example, it's about when Stefanos Tsitsipas claimed to the umpire that one woman on the stage imitated a bee and he couldn't get concentrated and make a serve. And all this video, it was like a theater on the court. I was really laughing during this, but I can't imagine how annoyed was Stefanos because of it.
Yeah, I remember that was in Cincinnati, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, funny moment. I don't know. I think, like, as a sort of content creator, I think Medvedev, the ultimate content machine. Every match that he plays, you know, something's gonna come out of it. He's just a funny guy on the court. Obviously, Indian Wells, he's legendary. I know what a hardcore is. I'm a hardcore specialist myself. That was a funny line that kept me throughout the year. And then also Rublev, all his ceremony speeches. I remember the one in Monte Carlo when he won. It was such a great one. Funny, insightful. Graceful, yeah.
And especially, it was a moment when he didn't recognize the Princess of Monaco, and it was a little bit funny.
Yeah, Rublev is such a great human, even though he sometimes bursts on the court. But he's a great guy at heart. So yeah, Medvedev, Rublev, Tsitsipas, you mentioned.
Shelton and Djokovic, and they call me baby.
Yeah, I think that was great. I definitely enjoyed Djokovic clapping back at Shelton. I think tennis needs more trash talking, quote unquote trash talking, even though it's not trash. But, you know, like in the NBA, I like when players go at each other, even though it's just for fun. But, you know, I think it's great that players can express themselves on the court. So that was definitely a great viral moment for tennis. Coco Gauff going at her parents in her victory speech at the US Open. Djokovic and Alcaraz in the Cincinnati ceremony speech final as well. Trying to remember what else. All the moments with the Carta boys. But yeah, there's just been so many great off-court moments as always. And yeah, I think it's important that we as fans and content creators push those moments as well to market the sport. I think obviously tennis is going through a pretty good time now with Alcaraz coming through and Djokovic and on the women's side, Iga, Sabalenka, Coco, etc. But it's also important to push the personalities out there so that the public can attach themselves to the players and know about what's going through their lives off the court. So yeah, I'm trying to push that as well. And yeah, I think tennis is going through a great time right now. Some great momentum. Yes.
Yeah. Totally agree with you.
Yeah, and for me, I will choose a medis just in Paris when he was making his way out of the arena. He flipped the bird as the spectators. And both, but Medi insisted that wasn't the case. And I remember he said he just taped his nails like this. No, really, it's nothing more than that.
Yeah, honestly, you could make a 20-minute video highlight reel of everything Medvedev has done this year. I think probably Tennis TV has done it on YouTube. But yeah, he's just a character. He's being himself, and it's funny because at first when he came on tour, I wasn't necessarily a fan of his. I was more of a Tsitsipas fan, and there was a bit of a feud between them. So I felt like I wanted to pick a side, but then I figured out he's just a great guy, Medvedev. And you can actually like both. They're just different people, and they pretty much reconciled after. So yeah, I warmed myself to Medvedev, and yeah, I just love him.
And don't forget his dance, which he dedicated to Tsitsipas when he won him, because you remember when Stefanos won Daniil.
I remember, and yeah, it's the same as Djokovic clapping back on Shelton. I like that kind of sort of trash talking. It's great for the game.
So it was the results of the year, and let's have a quick look to the new season about our expectations. As for me, the most important questions: whose comeback will be the most successful one? Because we have, of course, Nadal. We have comeback of the first rackets like Osaka and Kerber, also Anisimova, Raducanu. Everyone is coming back. How do you think who will make it better?
Naomi Osaka, I think. I mean, I haven't seen her play since she started practicing again. But yeah, from the videos I've seen, from the quotes I've read, I think she's incredibly motivated. And she's always been able to quickly get back to her level. So I think she's going to be competitive, not necessarily at the Australian Open, but by Indian Wells, Miami, I think she's going to be competitive. And I wouldn't be surprised if she competes for a slam this year already. So she has four slams, same as Iga. So it will be interesting to see who gets to five first. My pick is still Iga, but yeah, I think she said that she wants to win 8 more slams. Would be 12. She said she wants to go for the Olympic gold at Paris 2024. So she definitely has great ambitions next year. And I think she's going to be competitive, yeah. And as far as Rafa is concerned, obviously I would like him to be competitive as well, but he's coming back from a way more serious injury. He hasn't played for a year. So I don't know exactly what to expect. And also he's like 12 years older than Osaka. So yeah, I wouldn't expect too much from him. We'll see how it goes in Australia, but yeah, I would just like him to go for to be competitive for one last slam. But I'm trying to temper my expectations about Rafa.
But you know, during his training sessions right now, he looks really sharp and I think and quite competitive, and especially about his movements and his forehand and backhand are still strong. So I think he can be quite competitive. Anyway, I hope because my personal expectations is just to see him live again and again. I saw him 3 times in Roland Garros finals and I hope to do it this year again.
But
yeah. Go ahead.
I understand the position of his fans who are hoping that their star lifts at least one Grand Slam before his retirement, but can he find success when he returns to the court? I think no, because he has not been playing since last year Australian Open, and even his coach, Carlos Moyle, also raised some concerns regarding his comeback. He still derives the fitness standards that the game demands. And he said that if the Australian Open started tomorrow, it will be a real fear. So
I think everything that comes now should be treated as a bonus.
Yes.
Obviously, Rafa's had an amazing career. He's got nothing else to prove. He's got 22 slams. He's arguably the second or third best men's player of all time. So, everything else should be a bonus. It's probably going to be his last year on tour, of Last Dance. So I only have like 2 or 3 more expectations for him. It's to get a nice farewell at Roland Garros. You know, be able to come back one last year at Roland Garros and play and look a little bit like himself, to compete at the Olympics as well. I know he wants to play doubles with Carlos, which would be amazing. I hope it happens. And just go out on his terms, sort of like Federer did at the Laver Cup, even though it wasn't at a real tournament. But yeah, I just hope he's healthy and to choose how he retires.
As for the comebacks, as for the future comebacks, I would also say that Wozniacki will return to Australia for the first time in 4 years, and your comeback will continue at Australian Open thanks to Amanda Wildcard. I think she can make a great run in Melbourne because she loves this place. She feels supported there. She always says that Australian Open is the happiest slam for her. And her father even says that she played several times with Ayla Tomljanovic recently, and the Australian won a small tournament. And Wozniacki beat Ayla without any problems. So I hope Caro will make a good run in Melbourne.
Yeah, immediately when she returned in Montreal last year and the US Open, she was already playing like a 40 or 30 player. I think she can go for a slam as well next year. And it's amazing to see the depth of women's tennis. There's so many players that can be in the mix for the Grand Slams. So it makes for so many interesting storylines coming into 2024, and yeah, cannot wait to see if Wozniacki is going to be in the mix for those Grand Slams.
Yeah, Bastian, now a few months before the Olympics, you have already mentioned the Olympics. Please tell us, how does the city get prepared for this huge and big event?
Yeah, it's coming along. I don't know, it doesn't feel like the Olympics yet, of course, but it's going to be interesting. I'm probably going to be in Paris during the Olympics, so it's going to be interesting leaving them inside, from the inside. I hope to maybe work during those 2 weeks on the tennis event specifically. I'm obviously interested in seeing if Djokovic is going to manage to win his elusive Olympic gold medal. It's the only thing he hasn't won left. So yeah, he's going to be extremely motivated to win it. And yeah, I hope he does, actually. I hope he does. That would be the ultimate power move to finish his quest for everything there is to win in tennis by the Olympic gold in Paris at age 37. That would be amazing. And then, yeah, all the great doubles partnerships, Nadal and Alcaraz playing doubles potentially together, Wozniacki and Rune playing doubles as well together. Yeah, it's going to be a great celebration of tennis. And it's a little bit like 2012 when the games were held in London at Wimbledon. It's special seeing a Grand Slam venue being transformed into an Olympic venue. So it's going to be great seeing Roland Garros in a different light.
For the first time. And I remember one of your tweets when you wrote that you were pretty sure that one of French players will get a medal. Are you still sure? And maybe you can name someone exactly.
I'm not sure, but it's too late. It's too late to backtrack now. So I'm going to have to keep my word. Yeah, if I have to give one, I would say Arthur Fils, maybe. I think he's the up-and-coming player for France, right? He's the best under 20 player in the world right now. He's already top 50. He had a great run last year on clay. He beat Casper in Hamburg, which was a great win, his first top 10 win. I think he's primed to have a great clay season next year. Especially clay, but the whole season, really. I think he's going to be top 30 or top 20 by the end of the year. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him make the round of 16 or quarterfinals of the Olympics. And if he goes one round further, then he's going to be in the middle rounds, which is not a stretch. There's always a lot of surprises and upsets at the Olympics. I remember Kachanov making the final in Tokyo, which was a little bit of a surprise. So you never know. It's definitely a special event where you have to peak for 1 week, and it's only once every 4 years. So yeah, I'm gonna have to stick to my prediction and hope it comes true.
Okay, thank you. So we are not sure about we're sure about no results, but what we're sure totally that we'll have one more bright season in ATP, in WTA, also in doubles and mixed doubles, and we're really looking forward for a new season. And now I think that we've discussed quite all and maybe somewhere even more. Thank you for being with us today and hope to see you one more time with us a little bit later. And for now, I'd like to congratulate all our listeners with upcoming holidays. Merry Christmas, everyone, and happy time with your families, with your friends, and see you next season in 2024. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elisaveta and Kirill.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.